below, shone a small circle of pale, untattooed flesh. This carefully guarded canvas was Malak's only remaining piece of virgin skin. The sacred space had waited patiently, and tonight it would be filled. Although Malak did not yet possess what he required to complete his masterpiece, he knew the moment was fast approaching. Exhilarated by his reflection, he could already feel his power growing. He closed his robe and walked to the window, again gazing out at the mystical city before him. It is buried out there, somewhere. Refocusing on the task at hand, Malak went to his dressing table and carefully applied a base of concealer makeup to his face, scalp, and neck until his tattoos had disappeared. Then he donned the special set of clothing and other items he had meticulously prepared for this evening. When he finished, he checked himself in the mirror. Satisfied, he ran a soft palm across his smooth scalp and smiled. It is out there, he thought, and tonight, one man will help me find it. As Malak exited his home, he prepared himself for the event that would soon shake the U.S. Capitol building. He had gone to enormous lengths to arrange all the pieces for tonight. And now, at last, his final pawn had entered the game. Chapter 3. Robert Langdon was busy reviewing his note cards when the hum of the town car's tires changed pitch on the road beneath him. Langdon glanced up, surprised to see where they were. Memorial Bridge already? He put down his notes and gazed out at the calm waters of the Potomac passing beneath him. A heavy mist hovered on the surface. Aptly named, Foggy Bottom had always seemed a peculiar site on which to build the nation's capital. Of all the places in the New World, the forefathers had chosen a soggy riverside marsh on which to lay the cornerstone of their utopian society. Langdon gazed left, across the tidal basin, toward the gracefully rounded silhouette of the Jefferson Memorial, America's Pantheon, as many called it. Directly in front of the car, the Lincoln Memorial rose with rigid austerity, its orthogonal lines reminiscent of Athens' ancient Parthenon. But it was farther away that Langdon saw the city's centerpiece, the same spire he had seen from the air. Its architectural inspiration was far, far older than the Romans or the Greeks. America's Egyptian obelisk. The monolithic spire of the Washington Monument loomed dead ahead, illuminated against the sky like the majestic mast of a ship. From Langdon's oblique angle, the obelisk appeared ungrounded tonight, swaying against the dreary sky, as if on an unsteady sea. Langdon felt similarly ungrounded. His visit to Washington had been utterly unexpected. I woke up this morning anticipating a quiet Sunday at home, and now I'm a few minutes away from the U.S. Capitol. This morning at 4:45, Langdon had plunged into dead calm water, beginning his day as he always did, swimming 50 laps in the deserted Harvard pool. His physique was not quite what it had been in his college days as a water polo All-American, but he was still lean and toned, respectable for a man in his 40s. The only difference now was the amount of effort it took Langdon to keep it that way. When Langdon arrived home around 6, he began his morning ritual of hand-grinding Sumatra coffee beans and savoring the exotic scent that filled his kitchen. This morning, however, he was surprised to see the blinking red light on his voicemail display. Who calls at 6 a.m. on a Sunday? He pressed the button and listened to the message.
Good morning, Professor Langdon. I'm terribly sorry for this early morning call.
The polite voice was noticeably hesitant, with a hint of a southern accent.
My name is Anthony Gelbart, and I'm Peter Solomon's executive assistant. Mr. Solomon told me you're an early riser. He's been trying to reach you this morning on short notice. As soon as you receive this message, would you be so kind as to call Peter directly? You probably have his new private line, but if not, it's 202-329-5746.
Langdon felt a sudden concern for his old friend. Peter Solomon was impeccably well-bred and courteous, and certainly not the kind of man to call at daybreak on a Sunday unless something was very wrong. Langdon left his coffee half-made and hurried toward his study to return the call. I hope he's okay. Peter Solomon had been a friend, mentor, and, although only 12 years Langdon's senior, a father figure to him ever since their first meeting at Princeton University. As a sophomore, Langdon had been required to attend an evening guest lecture by the well-known young historian and philanthropist. Solomon had spoken with a contagious passion, presenting a dazzling vision of semiotics and archetypal history that had sparked in Langdon what would later become his lifelong passion for symbols. It was not Peter Solomon's brilliance, however, but the humility in his gentle gray eyes that had given Langdon the courage to write him a thank you letter. The young sophomore had never dreamed that Peter Solomon, one of America's wealthiest and most intriguing young intellectuals, would ever write back. But Solomon did, and it had been the beginning of a truly gratifying friendship. A prominent academic whose quiet manner belied his powerful heritage, Peter Solomon came from the ultra-wealthy Solomon family, whose names appeared on buildings and universities all over the nation. Like the Rothschilds in Europe, the surname Solomon had always carried the mystique of American royalty and success. Peter had inherited the mantle at a young age after the death of his father, and now, at 58, he had held numerous positions of power in his life. He currently served as the head of the Smithsonian Institution. Langdon occasionally ribbed Peter that the lone tarnish on his sterling pedigree was his diploma from a second-rate university, Yale. Now, as Langdon entered his study, he was surprised to see that he had received a fax from Peter as well. Peter Solomon, Office of the Secretary, the Smithsonian Institution. Good morning, Robert. I need to speak with you at once. Please call me this morning, as soon as you can, at 202-329-5746. Peter. Langdon immediately dialed the number, sitting down at his hand-carved oak desk to wait as the call went through.
Office of Peter Solomon, the familiar voice of the assistant answered. This is Anthony. May I help you?
Hello, this is Robert Langdon. You left me a message earlier.
Yes, Professor Langdon.
The young man sounded relieved.
Thank you for calling back so quickly. Mr. Solomon is eager to speak to you. Let me tell him you're on the line. May I put you on hold?
Of course. As Langdon waited for Solomon to get on the line, he gazed down at Peter's name atop the Smithsonian letterhead and had to smile. Not many slackers in the Solomon clan. Peter's ancestral tree burgeoned with the names of wealthy business magnates, influential politicians, and a number of distinguished scientists. Some even fellows of London's Royal Society. Solomon's only living family member, his younger sister Catherine, had apparently inherited the science gene because she was now a leading figure in a new cutting-edge discipline called noetic science. All Greek to me, Langdon thought, amused to recall Catherine's unsuccessful attempt to explain noetic science to him at